welcome to the Faith Church Peshtigo podcast. You can connect with us online at faithpeshtigo.com. We're also on Facebook. Just search for Faith Church Peshtigo. Today's podcast features a conversation between Pastor Jay and Pastor Robbie talking about the sermon from March 21st, 2021.
Hey, everybody.
You don't ever use that voice in any other context.
That's because I don't welcome everybody.
It is your podcast intro voice. You don't say that on a Sunday from the pulpit. You don't get up there.
Oh, no.
Hey, everybody.
Everybody. No, what do I say? Hello.
It's good. I mean, it's consistent, right? That's how we all know the podcast is starting.
Hello, podcast family.
There you go.
Welcome to another episode of the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams.
That's closer to last week's introduction, because it was me and Jeff, right? So you know that one starts, and thank you for listening to the Faith Church Podcast.
That's, yeah, I wonder, I didn't get any, did you guys get emails about the energy level last week?
No.
I didn't get a chance to listen to it yet.
No, we did not get any emails, because everyone was fast asleep. Gotcha.
Yes, you did. You got me so much I didn't have time to turn my head before. Well done. Speaking of getting me, we have some business to deal with.
We do.
I was gone for this past week, and before I left, a couple of things happened. One, I cleaned my office, which is amazing. That's something we could talk about. But the other thing, though, that happened was I dropped a few hints. We have in the past had a nice, modest snack selection. Just some baskets of snacks, you know, for those afternoon doldrums or for guests that come in.
Mm-hmm. And they're getting a little hangry before staff meeting.
Right. And those things went away mysteriously. They just kind of got used up and then they were gone.
It's replenished.
No, and I dropped several hints along the way, but they were never picked up. And so finally, before I left, I was more direct and said, we need to get snacks back in the office. The morale needs to be lifted. And, you know, and let's be clear. This is not like caviar bar or anything like that. Like, we're just talking about some almonds and, you know, that kind of stuff. And so I get back from vacation on Friday night. And then Saturday I was in the office to prep for my message on Sunday. And I worked in the morning, and then it got to be about 10:30 or so, and I thought, yeah, I'm a little hungry. I happened to notice all these boxes.
It was replenished.
Yeah, it was replenished beautifully, and I noticed it, but I was like, oh, great. And so at 10:30, I was like, oh, I'm a little peckish. I could use like a little walk around and maybe some almonds. And so I go out, and I reach for a box, and it is empty.
That's very disappointing.
And my thought was, ah. And then I immediately thought, who puts back an empty box? Come on, guys. Like, you take the last one, throw the box away.
Right. Common courtesy.
Yeah. Well, I was like, yeah, it's just slightly, you know, like, okay, no big deal. So I go to my second choice. The box is empty. At that point, I think, for crying out loud, that means somebody else probably
lazy
reached for this
coworkers
box.
Yeah, I'm working with.
I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. I reach for a third box. Also empty. And at this point, I actually verbally out loud.
Yourself,
yeah,
in the office.
I'm in the dark in the office. Nobody else is here. I verbally out loud let out a, what in the world? Who ate all the snacks and then left all the boxes? And so I grab a fourth box at that point, and then it clicks. Aha. It was intentional.
Ah. Indeed.
I realized then I was the victim of a practical joke. And no one will admit to it. This is the thing, is nobody will tell me who did it, but I shared on our team chat board or whatever. I let them know what the experience was because I thought, okay, whoever did this, they deserve to know that it played out perfectly.
You are a considerate recipient of a prank.
I am. It's one of my best qualities. I admired it. I admired the design of it, the execution, and the humility of whoever did it, whoever's idea it was, that they didn't need to. Now, I did immediately start looking around for cameras. So that did happen. I don't know if there's video evidence of my reaction or not, but
sadly no.
I thought, okay, am I being recorded right now? Which would have been both awesome and a little creepy.
A little creepy.
But I did think like, oh, this worked perfectly. Whoever did this, I could not have played better into it by.
So here's what I want to know. Yeah. I want to know, if you play a prank on somebody, are you fully satisfied just knowing that the prank was successful and accomplished its intended end? Or do you also need the person to know you were responsible for said prank? Is part of the delight in them knowing you were the one who did it, or just knowing that it worked?
No, often I've actually found there have been times in my past where I may have played a practical joke, as it were, on someone, and they blamed the wrong person.
Hmm.
And I delighted in that even more. And never
revealed.
Just left that doubt forever in their mind. I don't need, because I find the humor of just like, I would want to know. So I did unto others as I would have them do unto
me.
I just wanted whoever, I didn't need to find out who did it. I'm curious. But I did want to make sure that the person responsible was able to enjoy the moment, to know that I not only did not figure it out, but I didn't anticipate it. And so much so that it took me 4 boxes before I finally figured out what was going on. So I just couldn't imagine. I thought if I had played that joke, I would be so delighted to know this. And so there you go.
That's good.
Whoever idea it was, I'm guessing it was a team effort. I'm guessing it wasn't just one person unilaterally. The response of the staff was such that no one was like, wait, what happened? So obviously everybody knew. Whoever had the idea originally, though, kudos. So you go.
There it is.
And so that inhibited my sermon prep, which was why this one fell flat.
Did it?
Well, I just throw that out there in case anybody's thinking.
That's one way to transition. I was going to transition with something like, and the beauty of the prank was in its simplicity. And speaking of simplicity, Jay.
It was simple.
You talked about that this weekend.
You know what else
and
happened?
And did an excellent job.
Thanks, though. But by the way, I looked for the snacks then. Because I was like, well, these then have to be somewhere. Yeah. And I couldn't find them.
Hmm. That must have been very disappointing to you.
It was, because by that time I was actually hungry. I was thinking, okay, enough joking around. Where are the almonds? But I never found them.
Oh,
but now,
sorry.
Miraculously, they have appeared. So simplicity. Yeah, we talked about simplicity this past weekend. And it was interesting. It's a difficult topic. Well, I was also trying to combine it with sacrifice, because we had to shorten our series, and we were originally going to do simplicity and sacrifice. And so I decided to just kind of combine those. So I don't know how well that actually worked, but I think we did cover some good ground about just thinking about simplicity. So I don't know if there's anything that stuck out to you about that, or, you know, what would be helpful to kind of unpack some more.
I thought it was really helpful. I think if we talk about anything, I think one of the things that I love about the podcast is an opportunity to get even more practical. The things that maybe we can mention from kind of a high level, or just throw out there quickly in a sermon, but because we don't want the sermons to be an hour and a half long, we just throw out one or two examples. And so maybe we could take some time and talk through some more specifics of what it looks like to simplify. I really appreciated you addressing the idea that simplification is not the end. It's just one of many means that we employ toward growing in our understanding of Christ and abiding in Him. And so I would love if we could take a couple minutes and talk through some specifics of how do we do that. If somebody comes out of your sermon and says, that makes a lot of sense. My life feels really cluttered. My house feels really cluttered. These things are not the way I would want them to be. What do I do? How do I move forward in this?
All right. So we talked about these different categories. So why don't we just, we're gonna take each one of those, time, money, and stuff. And we'll give a little bit of practical help in each one of those. Because my guess is that as people were listening to the message, hopefully if they're engaged in that, they're thinking there are some of those areas that are more realistic. Like we have people in our congregation who are like paycheck to paycheck. And I think what's important to understand is even then, there's simplicity that can happen. I think we get into this mindset, and that's the scarcity mentality that I was talking about, that we're just always telling ourselves that we don't have enough. So regardless of whether that's actually the case or not, we're not very discerning when it comes to that. And so I think it's really important that you don't start with saying, well, do I have any spare of this resource? Yeah. Like, do I have spare time that I should be simplifying? I would say, well, maybe not. That's why you need to simplify.
Right.
So if you, and it will look different for different people. Like there are some people who could make radical strides. Like it's the equivalent of, like some people have closets full of clothes and a storage unit full of, like some people have a ton that they could pare down. Other people, it may look much simpler. And so same way with money. Like there are some people who could look at their budget and look at their spending and look at their earnings and realize like, I could simplify this a lot, like huge amounts. And then there are other people where it may be very small, but I think it's important to just think through simplicity. And I think, so we talked about a couple of overarching principles here with these. And one of those is, you had mentioned earlier, Robbie, that just intentionality is just like, so as we're talking about these things, like one of the key points is just be intentional.
Right, because we arrive at the place where we are largely due to a lack of intentionality. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I am going to try to schedule my day to a point where I am stressed and filled with anxiety and don't have time for anything that I actually think is important. Nobody chooses to do that. But we don't choose to not do that. If I can throw in enough negatives in that sentence. We don't make an intentional decision to ensure that doesn't happen. We just kind of keep moving along. And so I don't look around my room or my office and go, why on earth do I have so much stuff? Because I at one point decided I want to fill this office with more things than I can possibly use. I just wasn't trying not to do that. So much of it is just choosing to be intentional. Before, if we're talking about stuff, I'm choosing to actually think about, do I actually need this thing? Why do I need this thing? Am I going to continue to use this thing? You know, we ask specific questions that help kind of filter out why am I purchasing this thing? And when I'm handling my money, I'm asking questions of what is my end goal and is this moving me toward this? And when I'm looking at time, I'm thinking through is this the best that scripture commands us to make the best use of the time? And so is this actually the best use of the time, or is this just a good or okay or even overtly bad use of the time? But to be intentional in that. And I wonder if part of the problem why that's difficult is a lack of confidence in I know what I'm supposed to be about. Right? Yeah. So because I don't necessarily start my day with this is the most important thing and this is the best use of my time, Soren Kierkegaard used to talk about willing the one thing, that instead of being double-minded or having all of these divided ideas, to will the one thing. And I just wonder if for many of us, we don't know what that one thing is supposed to be, and so it's difficult to be intentional in making those decisions.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's where the idea of writing down, like, what is my purpose? What is my mission? I know a lot of families who have family mission statements, or you can have personal mission statements. And it's important to understand that it's going to be, it should be, if it's a biblical mission statement, it should be some form of the Great Commandment and the Great Commission. But the question is, okay, but then how is that playing out right now? And so that's where that intentionality. So part of forming that mission statement is, I know that I am called to make disciples who make disciples. And right now, because I have young children at home, that is a major part of that. And so that's why I spend time with them. That's why I, like, my time kind of is oriented in such a way that with them in mind, you know, and money that I spend is with them in mind, vacations that we take, like all that stuff is, I'm mindful of them and what does it look like to disciple them, which that will look different when they are out of the house. And so we talked about that kind of stuff. So that's being intentional. I think the other piece that we want to make sure that we mention before we give some of these practical tips is to be mindful that all these things are connected. So I mentioned the message, you know, that saying yes to one thing is saying no to something else. So that's an important piece, that if I'm going to agree to this, I'm saying no to something else that would occupy that same time or money or whatever the case is. But the reverse of that is also true. And I didn't get a chance to talk about that in the message, but saying no to something should be an intentional yes to something else. So it's bringing in that intentionality, but realizing all these things are connected. So if I'm saying no to this time commitment over here, why am I saying no to it? What's the better thing that I'm choosing? Because to your point about intentionality, if I don't have a better thing, you mentioned this earlier, if I don't have a better thing that I'm choosing, then I'm almost certainly going to end up falling into a worse thing.
Yes.
So I say no to volunteering, I say no to volunteering at church on Sunday morning so that I can go home and sit on the couch and watch football.
Right.
It's
not a win.
No, that's not
a good no.
No. But so that's another piece, is realizing how these are all connected. So which one should we start with? Should we start with stuff, since you were?
Or sure. Let's start with stuff.
Stuff seems like that's the least.
It's probably the one that's most in front of your face, right? Because you come home and you look at your kitchen counter and you go, "That's a lot of stuff."
Right. Yeah. So how do we deal with stuff? What's a practical tip? You had some ideas on this.
Stuff is a difficult one because, again, you don't necessarily think about how much you're accumulating. I saw several years ago, I was watching a minimalist YouTuber who was filming himself getting rid of all of his stuff, and his goal was to get down to 50 items, that he was going to own 50 things, which when you say out loud, you're like, oh, 50 things, that sounds like a lot, until you realize, like, you have socks and underwear for one day of the week and you're already like over 20% through all the stuff you're allowed to own. Like, so that's not much. That all fit on one bed. And so I'm watching that and I'm thinking, well, that's crazy. Like, I'm not going to do that. And I just kind of thought, like, well, what about 100 things? Like, how close could I get to 100 things? And just started thinking through what that would look like. And was immediately horrified and discouraged when, after like 8 minutes of inventory, I had nearly 100 things just on my nightstand and bathroom counter.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
I'm going, all hope is lost, yep. Right? There's no chance. Like, this is how bad this has gotten. Evidently,
you haven't even gone out of your bedroom.
I haven't even gotten out of bed. Like, I can see my bed over 100 things. And just feeling super overwhelmed by that. And then thinking, like, oh my goodness, like, and as you said earlier, like, context is everything, right? It's not about getting to some magic number that, like, owning this number of things is what's holy. In, you know, 500 years ago, when they actually only owned 50 things, there were people going, this is extravagance. Like, I need to simplify. Like, and in that context, that probably made sense, or didn't make sense in the same way that following Jesus continues to not make sense. But to stop and say, so what is my motivation for doing this? Why am I getting rid of this? And what I have found is I am not super motivated by, I'm just getting rid of the stuff for the sake of having less stuff. Even though it is good for my soul and good for my head to do that. Like if my desk is completely cluttered with stuff, that is an indication that my head and my heart is super cluttered as well. And so, you know, not necessarily that one causes the others. It's kind of cyclical, right? So it is good for me to not have all of the clutter. It helps me focus. It helps me be more effective in the things that matter. But unfortunately, that's often not motivation enough to just say, well, this is better for me. For me personally, I have found what is most motivating is thinking, but how is this robbing somebody else of a blessing? How could I be blessing someone else with this? So just saying like, I've got 10 t-shirts. Why do I need 10 t-shirts? That seems like more t-shirts than I need. I'll justify that by saying, well, I already bought it. So it's kind of silly to get rid of it. I already paid for it. I have it. So I'll just keep it. Plus, what if this t-shirt gets a hole in it? Then I'll be thankful that I have this other t-shirt here. And so I come up with these simple justifications of like, well, why it'd be ridiculous for me to get rid of that. The only thing that really changes it for me is stopping and thinking, but somebody might need that t-shirt right now. Like that t-shirt that's shoved in the back of my drawer that I never pull out because it's not my favorite. I'm always going to pull out my favorite t-shirt first. And so that one just stays secluded in the back of the drawer. Somebody could use that right now. And then I start thinking of it in terms of my hanging on to that thing that I'm not even using is actually withholding that blessing from someone else. And then it starts feeling like a motivation of, I would much rather this be used right now by someone else than I just hang on to it for the sake of hanging on to it in the case, you know, that maybe someday I'm going to use it. So for me, you know, we talked about motivation, that you want to make sure that you have the right motivation for it. I'm not motivated by just have less stuff. I'm motivated by how can I better serve and love others? How can I care? Like that stirs something in me that makes me go, that's worth getting rid of half of my t-shirts if that means somebody can be blessed by that and needs that.
And I don't think that's the downplay that, like you said, it does remove clutter in your mind, and it does, I mean,
which we, also we have, directly benefits yes. me, right?
I mean, the decision fatigue that we have is real. Like the fact that kids Absolutely. Have, most kids have far too many toys, and so they it's overwhelming. So they end up, I mean, every parent knows what it's like to buy a toy. The kid plays with it for the day that they get it, and then after that, it gets right. buried.
And it's standing in the middle of their room, surrounded by 500 toys, saying, right. "I have nothing to play with."
Right.
Like, what?
And we're no different because yeah. we, like, I look at my bookshelf and think I just have nothing to read, and right. I have all these books I haven't read. It's so I do think, but I think it's so fascinating. You said the I spent money on this. That's such a thing for me, man. I if I bought something, then I feel like I have to keep it because otherwise it was a waste of money.
Right.
But the funny thing is,
sunk cost.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, it was already a waste of money.
Right.
The moment I purchased it, right. I wasted it. So now I want to make two wrongs make a right exactly. by saying now I'm going to be shrewd and hold on to it, withhold it from. Now it's crazy. So I'll keep it as a way of like, okay, at some point I will use this, and when I do, I'll be justified for having gotten it in the first place.
Right.
And that doesn't work.
Never.
It's actually. Like for me personally, I have to think about it in terms, like you said there, to be a blessing to somebody else, to say, okay, well, I bought this, but it turns out that was a mistake. I shouldn't have done that or whatever, but now I'm going to let it be redeemed. So it's a theme of redemption here with a lot of these things. Like the reality is we have all bought things that we didn't need. We've all done the impulse buy, whether small or big or whatever.
Yeah.
But there... giving away stuff is not just cutting your losses. It is actually a way of redeeming this, that, okay, I bought this jacket that I just thought looked cool, but I don't need it. But now by giving it to Goodwill, somebody else can pick it up at a fraction of the cost and be blessed by it.
Right.
And that's a way of redeeming that thing that I bought. Just as surely as if I had bought it that day at the store and bought it for this person.
Yep.
You know, there we wouldn't see that as a waste. Like if you felt like, oh, I want to buy this for this person, we would think that was great. So it's just a delayed version of that. I think also you're talking about the, just to put a bow on the stuff thing, is just that whole fear of like, well, what if I need this someday? For me, that speaks so much to self-reliance you know, for me, that I like, I have to be prepared for every possible circumstance, independently, independent of anybody else. You know, there are other cultures in the world that really do not understand. They do. They would not get why people in a, say, a church family like this, why we would all need to own a chainsaw, for example.
Right. Right.
They'd just be like, well, you've got a few. That's good enough. But no, we feel like every individual has to be equipped with every item. And that's just not true. So like, that may be a thing that it would be interesting. I wonder what that would look like. That's another way of simplifying, is to say to people, like maybe in your gospel community or in your circle of friends, to let them know that, hey, I've got this thing. I rarely ever use it, but I own it. And so if you guys have a need of that, don't go buy it. Just come and use it, you know. And then that's another way of simplifying, in a sense. You may not give it away, but you may say, like, you know what, I've accumulated these things, and I know that they could be a blessing in that way to other people too. So,
which is very Acts, right? They had all things in common.
Right.
It's understanding, I don't have to go out and buy this thing that I'm going to use once every 7 years.
Right.
If I know somebody that does, I can borrow it from them. If I own something that I'm only going to use every once every 7 years, I can freely give that to others, that idea of sharing. But so much of that, so much of our identity is wrapped up in those things. And we kind of joke about, like, retail therapy.
Right.
But we do get a little shot of dopamine, right? Every time we buy something, every time that Amazon box shows up at the door, there is this little, we find pleasure in that, and that little shot of pleasure makes us feel better. And so it does cost us something to stop buying those things, but we have to ask, what is it costing us by continuing in that, by continuing to seek comfort and pleasure and joy in stuff, in created things,
right,
rather than in the Creator? And why do I feel like, well, God isn't enough for me, but buying this new fine tip pen is going to do it for me?
Right.
Like, it's not like big stuff. It's not like I got to go buy a boat. Like, I can be thrilled by getting a pack of new highlighters in the mail. Like, it's the silliest things. And I got to ask, like, why is my heart drawn to that? Why does it find pleasure and delight and satisfaction, if only for a few seconds? Because then the first time I use it, it's now just a highlighter or a pen or a book or whatever it is. Like, it immediately loses that satisfaction, rather than finding that in Christ. And so the idea of simplifying is not just getting rid of your stuff, but buying less stuff as well, right? You need to, you need input and output needs to be dealt with.
Right.
And so by choosing not to buy that thing that I objectively do not need, it allows me an opportunity to exercise actual faith in Christ and saying, maybe, just maybe, you can provide for me the satisfaction that I'm trying to find in purchasing this item.
Yeah. And that's where, you're right. We have to buy less stuff, not only get rid of stuff, but then, because if you just get rid of stuff and now you cleared out all this room so that you can fill it back up with more dopamine.
Throw out this shirt so I can, so I can buy five more shirts. That's
right. And you know, I mentioned on Sunday, like when we lived in the RV for a while, that was one of the things that just happened naturally, was whenever the kids or any of us wanted to get something, the thought was, well, what do I have to get rid of something.
Yeah,
because there's only so much space. Like, we didn't have endless amounts of space in the trailer. Like, you had to say, like, well, yeah, if we really want to buy this thing, whether it's food item or whatever, it's going to have to go in a space that then has to be. So I think some helps in that are limiting the space, even containers, like, you know, in your closet, just say, I'm only going to give myself this much real estate. That can be a help. It can be a help, like I mentioned on Sunday, to box up things that just and put it away for a month or two and just see what you even remember that you put away. But all these things are meant to kind of free up, because the other thing that stuff does, this is the transition into time and money, is stuff is interesting because it requires both time and money.
Yes.
So it when you're talking about minimal, you know, just simplifying things, simplifying stuff will go a long ways to simplifying time and money, yep. because the number of things that we buy that then obviously cost us money when we buy them, but then it also costs us time, both in the research that I'm guilty of all the time, of pouring in tons of time and researching this purchase, but it also goes into cost then to maintain it. Like, you need space to yep. store it. You need to, like, if it's a vehicle, it needs maintenance. If it's a, you know, whatever the case is, there's maintenance that has to take place. And so so that kind of moves into, I don't know if you want to attack, you want to do money or time?
Let's get after money.
All right, money. So simplify your stuff and then you simplify your money. Well, we're good then. That's done.
Sweet. All right, moving on to time.
Kidding. So what do we... You weren't supposed to take that. You were supposed to say, no, oh. You're supposed to say, like, because you asked the question, okay, so money, what does it look like to simplify? So let me ask you this. What does it look like to simplify money for the person who is paycheck to paycheck?
Well, that's a great question. Because that's a lot of us, right? Because we assume the idea of changing how we handle our money, that's for people who have so much of it that it's difficult for them to figure out what to do with it all.
Right.
And I thought you using the example of the widow giving her last 2 cents is such a helpful perspective on that, to say she was actually putting more thought into how she was handling her money in a worshipful way than all of the men who are bringing the sacks of cash that they're dumping at the temple. Jesus specifically says that. And to your point, he does not then follow her up and say, hey, here's two, let me give you those 2 cents back. Like, he allows her to right. experience the blessing of that sacrificial worship. So I think the first step is understanding that it applies to you. If you are paycheck to paycheck, then understanding where your money is going and how you're investing that in an intentional way, then it applies to you as much as it does to the person who has much. And I think, well, that's funny, whatever context you're in, you assume it applies to the other person, right? So
right.
So you might be the one who says, well, I'm financially very comfortable, and so I don't have to be super intentional in my money because I have plenty of it. Well, that's garbage. That's unwise, and so yeah. First step is realizing wherever you are financially, you will benefit from intentionality in thinking through how you are simplifying your spending.
Yeah, and I think that intentionality. So you talk about the person who's comfortable financially. There is a level in which they should say, 'cause simplifying money doesn't just mean saving more or accruing more or getting the better deal. Like, we right. talked about how that's a motivation for me a lot of times, is I will spend ridiculous amounts of time in my pursuit of saving a few dollars. Mm-hmm. And instead of just saying, well, no, I can pay that price for that thing, so I'm just going to pay that and be done with it, I end up wasting a lot of time that could be spent on more valuable things. So this goes to the whole yes or no. The question is simply like, well, why am I spending this? Like, what am I hoping to get from this? What do I need from this? And it isn't always like, it's not always so clear cut when you say like, well, do I need it? So then you get into things of like, well, I bought this item from the grocery store. I could have bought fewer things. I could have bought the smaller box of macaroni and cheese. I could have, like,
right.
How do you guard against that kind of mentality? Like, if simplifying your stuff is not just getting rid of everything, and so if I dare keep 2 sweatshirts, then I am just living extravagantly beyond mm-hmm. my means. How do you let that, how do you guard against that with money, where you could say, so then are we saying it's never okay to eat out? Is it never okay to buy a coffee? Yeah. Because I could more simply do that. How do we handle that?
Man, as you're saying that, the first thing that popped in my head is we have to care enough to handle it, right? Just to even stop and think, I should actually be thinking about whether or not I get this coffee or not, I think is such a huge step. And to understand, we don't ask that question as a matter of law to, again, just like the stuff, because it's not saying owning X amount of objects is more Christ-like than owning Y amount of objects. Spending X amount on whatever it is, recreational activities, food, clothing, housing, coffee. It's not a new law that we're creating where we're saying right. if you get this number of lattes, that's totally okay. But if you get one more than that, you've now slipped into sin. It's being intentional enough to say, am I thinking about this money that I'm spending? Do I look at what I've spent and go, wow, I spent $100 on this thing this month. That's like groceries for a family. Like, was that a good trade? Like, am I thinking through those things? Am I thinking through like time? Am I making the best use of my funds? I mean, what do you think about that?
I disagree with everything you just said.
That's fair.
No, I think I feel like I'm asking hard questions. It's so funny. We do a pre-conversation
yeah.
if people don't know that or whatever, and I'm going way off script.
No, you're not asking any of those. You're throwing these heavy questions at me, and I go, what? Thinking, you want me to say what to people who are paycheck to paycheck?
This is a hard, you know, but I think what you're saying is true, that we want to be intentional, but to understand that money is it's a resource. God has placed us where he has placed us. And I've gone through different times where I've compared to, okay, most of the world lives on less than a dollar a day. Right. So therefore, you know, should I be doing that? And then you realize, well, that's not possible in our culture. Like, you can't, and you could argue it's not possible in any culture. And that goes to our poverty issue. But the answer wouldn't be to have a worldwide mandate of a brand new minimum wage. Right. Like, that wouldn't fix these issues. I think it's again saying, what am I saying yes to? What am I saying no to? So if I'm saying yes to taking my wife out for dinner, then I'm saying I'm gonna spend this money because for whatever reason, like, we have these resources, I can do that, and I take her out to dinner to connect with her. That's I think that is a God honoring way to use that. If I am looking to buy this thing because I feel entitled to this thing, or because I want to spend money on this experience because I'm afraid I'm missing out. I saw other people have this experience, and so I need to have that experience.
Yeah.
Like, that's where the intentionality comes in. The intentionality isn't meant as like God is this hall monitor that's looking at you shrewdly and saying like, well, did you really need that latte? It's just being willing to ask a simple question of my heart. And sometimes the answer is actually far more simple than I make it out to be, because we are really good at justifying uses of money. I think all of us are really good at that, and we're really good at being able to see where other people are wasting their money, which is always funny to me that like we live in a culture that's just very judgmental. If you are concerned about any of these things, it's very judgmental of like, well, what year did you buy that car? It's one of the things here that when people in our culture here, if they buy something new, they always have to tell you what kind of a deal they got, or that it's actually, or that it's older than you think it is, or that they never do this. So I never buy a car like that. We never buy new, or I never buy this. I never bought this nice of a car or whatever, as if they have to justify that. And I'm always looking at it saying, I don't know. Like, that's between you and God.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's a sin to buy a new car. Like, there are people who would say, well, that is just sin. And I don't know how you could say that any more than, you know, that it's a sin to buy brand new underwear. Like, right. I don't know. I mean, it's just, but I think it is just being conscious. And in that, by the way, is being conscious that God chooses to bless us through those things sometimes. He delivers gifts to us through the resources he has provided for us at times. And so to just be able to receive that as a blessing. I know that when I moved here, quick little anecdote that we don't have time for. When I moved here, one of the things that was really a struggle for me was I had not, in our church plant in Colorado, I intentionally did not take a salary. I felt convicted that I did not ever want to put that burden on the church. I didn't want to put that stumbling block. I was looking to, you know, Paul saying like, We didn't take anything from you because we just wanted to be able to offer the gospel. And so I felt personally convicted of that. That didn't mean that it was wrong for pastors to get paid or, you know, to be supported by the church or anything. But for me, I felt that. But when we were offered this position and offered the opportunity to move to Wisconsin, that was a big struggle for me. And I talked to one of my mentors who also had the same values that I did, that really believed in bivocational ministry, believed in the power of a pastor not drawing a salary from the church, but working a regular job and just ministering to people through that. And I asked him, expecting him to say like, well, yeah, you're kind of a sellout if you go and you take this position. But what he said to me is he said, I think maybe, you know, is it possible that God is just saying, I just want to give you this gift? Like, no, you don't deserve it. No, you're not entitled to it. No, it's not but just receive the gift graciously. Mm-hmm. And I got this picture of if I give my kid a Christmas present and they just refuse to accept it because they say, you know, Dad, your love for me is enough. I don't need your stuff. And I would say, well, I know, but I saw this and I thought of you and I wanted to give this to you. So please, would you, you know, I want you to enjoy it. No, I can't. Like that's, I think we just have to be careful not to create a new law for us in that and then be motivated by guilt and shame in it. But rather, like you said, with the stuff, to be motivated by, well, if I simplify this, that frees me up then. And with money, it does free us up to be generous, and it frees us up, and it's incredibly empowering. You know, Lauren and I had a season of life where we were paycheck to paycheck, where it was very difficult. But God still motivated us to give, and it was really empowering in a lot of ways. Like that was kind of a side benefit, was that we realized like, no, we still can be generous.
Yeah,
we don't just have to be recipients here. We did receive. Yeah. So while we were trying to bless others, people were blessing us, and learning to receive others' generosity helps with being generous. Like that's a healthy cycle, as opposed to me being shrewd and just like stingy with my resources and saying that, well, simplifying money means just being frugal.
Right.
And I'm not going to spend what I don't need to spend. Well, that tends to create a feeling of both judgment on myself and on others when they feel freedom Absolutely. To spend something, rather than I want to receive generosity and give generously.
Right. Because ultimately, generosity is not a matter of resources, but a matter of the heart.
Right.
So if the heart is there, there will be generosity regardless of the context and the resources. If the heart is not there, then it doesn't matter how many more resources I accumulate, I'm still going to continue to not be generous because it's not dependent on resources. It's a character issue.
Which, man, we didn't even get to retirement, which we were going to talk about, because there are a lot of people who wonder then, like, how much do you save? I think I'll just say this. If like a practical tip that we had talked about was, as you're like, how do you save? Because in the Bible, it would lead us to think, okay, well, retirement is bad, like retirement accounts, because they sold everything they had and gave it. And so it's just kind of dependent.
And you got guys like John Wesley who are saying, if I die with more than $20 in my bank account, you can consider me a robber and a thief.
Right. Yeah. Which fortunately, I don't know. Right?
It's a strong opinion.
Yeah. And there is that kind of feeling out there. I've had people wrestle through that. Like, is it unbiblical to have a retirement account? Or and I think, again, we have cultural issues that are in play here. I mean people live way past when they are able to work now. Not only that, but they live past when they're even hireable. Like, we live in a culture where most people are dependent on somebody else to give them a job. It's not the same thing as like, I could make some tents and sell them,
right?
And then I could not do that. And as long as my hands work to make the tent, I could sell it. We don't live in that world. But I do think there's something to be said for stating like modest goals and not getting trapped into the world where, like, if you read articles on retirement accounts, the one thing that they will all tell you is you don't have enough.
Right. You need just a little bit more.
Yep. It's always fear mongering of like, you don't have enough. there's still time. Like, this is what you need to do. And I think we can get caught up in that.
Yeah.
And what we have to realize is what the world is, the picture that the world is painting about retirement is that that's when you finally get to enjoy all the fruit of your labor. And so most of the time they're setting an income level that is like, well, the most extravagant that you've ever lived. And so you have to be mindful of that and say, well, I don't need to do that. Like, yeah. I'm going to continue to live and serve and do the things that I'm doing now. And so I think it's just important, again, to be intentional and to be considerate of, okay, what does it look like to just abide in Jesus in this with a mindset? Like, if I'm trying to find my security in my retirement, that's a motive that I want to kind of unearth.
Yeah.
But if I'm just trying to make sure that my spouse is cared for the length of her life or whatever, like that's a different angle. You know, if I want to try to leave my kids with such an inheritance that they never have to work, well, that's maybe that motivation isn't, you know, I need to unearth that a little bit.
Yeah.
But if I want to bless them with a gift to help them, like, great.
Yeah.
So
no, that's good. So,
do we have time to end with time?
We have a scarcity of time to talk about time.
We should so have
we better,
more
we better
simple.
Simplify.
We should have simplified this conversation already.
Yeah.
So time.
Just give us a really practical.
Okay.
What does it look like to manage my time differently? Because that's probably the conversations afterwards. That was probably the one of the biggest ones of people that I was speaking with, just saying, yes, constantly busy or feel busy. And so we spent some time talking about like the difference between working hard and busyness, and that busyness is ultimately a matter of the heart rather than activity. We don't have time to get into all that. So to focus on, if we say, yes, I am, my day is too cluttered, I honestly don't feel like I have time to do the things that I know are important, How do I fix that? What do you tell that person?
So there's a couple of things that come to mind. One is time, probably more than these other things, is where a scarcity mentality really rears its ugly head.
Yeah.
Because like you said there, it's important to understand that busyness is a condition of the heart. Even on our busiest days, we likely, I've drawn the comparison to pioneer days, you know, where they were just the simplest things, their survival, the things they had to do for survival took from sunup to sundown.
Yeah.
And our things that we need for survival, we get in a second. I need water and I can turn on the faucet. I need food. I could have food in, you know, as long as, you know, you have money coming to that, but most of us, we have access to food.
Yeah.
Even when we have tragedies where someone's house burns down or whatever, they can get shelter quickly. You know, like we have hotels, we have places, like those kinds of needs are met so quickly. Most of our busyness is extracurricular things that we fill up our time with, but then it is just a condition of the heart. Where I have had days where I have thought to myself, I am so busy, I do not have time to deal with these things. And then I will just write down, what are the things I need to do today? And I'll look at the list and I'm embarrassed by how few things there actually are.
Yeah.
I realize that I just go into the day. So I would say that's number one, is just be aware that you function. And I feel confident saying that everybody functions this way in our culture. You function as though you don't have enough time. And that's independent of what time you actually have. I think it is critical when I realize that God has given us all the time we need to accomplish all that He has called us to. That's an important truth to just lay out there, that God is not the overbearing boss that demands that you get 80 hours of work done in a 40-hour work week. We all have examples of that. I mean, you clearly have an overbearing boss that makes you do far more than
I'm thankful you were willing to say it.
I just, you know, I just wanted to get that out there about Leslie. But the idea that you, we sometimes picture God like that. Like he wants me to go share the gospel with all the nations. I have to make disciples of all the nations. I have to volunteer. I have to give. I have to do all these things. Like we can paint God as though he is this overbearing boss that just gave us this entirely too long to-do list, but it just has unrealistic expectations for us. That couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah.
He actually, the pace of life that he has given us is a restful pace. Like, yes, we labor hard, we work hard, but there is a rhythm to it. And the issue is that we say yes to things that he is not calling us to say yes to.
Yeah.
And then we end up saying no to things that he is calling us to. And that's why it feels like too much.
Right.
So if I'm saying yes to all these things that make it so my morning is so rushed that I don't have a single second to spare between getting myself up, getting the kids up, getting food, you know, shoved in their mouths and getting them out the door. Then I look at the Bible, which would encourage me to spend time, ideally in the morning, where I just withdraw and spend time with the Lord. Mm. I look at that as like, well, I can't add that to this list.
Yeah.
But is it possible that the reason why that feels like it's overbearing and overloading is because I have preloaded my time with all of these other things? So that would be number one, is just to get my mind wrapped around the idea that what God has called me to do absolutely fits in the time that he has given me.
Yeah.
100%. And I would challenge anybody on that. There's so many stories I have of people and in my own life where when you really start to dig, you realize, oh, I'm saying I don't have time to share the gospel because I have committed to this because I spend, you know, 30 hours a week on this hobby that I have to do because I spend all this money on it. And so now in order to justify the expense that I spent on all this, I've got to go spend all this time doing it.
Yeah.
And therefore I don't have time to spend any time with my neighbor. Like, you start to unearth some of those things. So that's one thing. The practical thing that I would throw out there that I tend to do just in a day-to-day basis. So is when I'm running errands, for example, I build in extra time when I'm scheduling that. When I think about how long does it take me to run to Walmart, for example, or to go to the bank, I typically double the time that I think it'll actually take me because I want to have that time blocked off so that I can be available, because I believe that whenever I go to Walmart, I just believe that God is going to put me into a situation where I could minister to somebody. Mm. And the last thing I want to be doing is looking at them and being like, oh, I'd love to have this conversation, but I got
to
go.
Now, I scheduled 15 minutes to get 30 minutes of shopping done. So right. I got to fly past you rather than feeling like, oh, I literally scheduled time to have this, to enjoy this holy interruption in my day and engage with this person in a substantive way.
Yep.
And I think that's really helpful and super practical.
Yeah. I know that can be scary, and it doesn't always work that way. Yes, there are times where even I have to rush in, run in somewhere, grab something and head out. Sure. But again, that's a condition of the heart. And to just say, okay, God, if you have this person for me to talk to, like if you want to use me in this way, then you're providing the time for me to do that.
Right.
It's only my own expectations and my own ridiculous list or sense of accomplishment that I have to get all these done in the most efficient way possible. Efficiency is not often the main goal. I mean, Jesus rarely, if ever, took the efficient route. And we worship efficiency in our culture. Like, it's just such an idol for us. Like, we wear it as a badge of honor that all the things we could fit in to a certain amount of time, when I think, man, wouldn't it have been better if we just got one of those errands done, but we're able to bless somebody in the process? But.
Or if not efficient, if we wouldn't call it efficiency, we would call it ease. I want to do it the easiest way possible.
That's true too, yeah.
So I might not be thinking, because I want to get 10 more things done today. I might just be thinking, I want to put as little effort into this task as possible. So I just want to get in, get my stuff, and get out. And to your point, like if if I have an afternoon where I am sprinting through Walmart because I got to get this stuff and get home really quick because somebody's coming over, like that's life.
Right.
If every time I go to Walmart, it has that sort of hectic tendency to it.
That's good, yeah.
That's terrible planning. I'm not using my time well, and I'm not, I'm certainly not being intentional with it. So, I mean, in all of these things, you know, we want it to be that very binary, is this right or is it wrong? And the problem is, like, things happen outside of our control, and so there's going to be times when I'm going to need to spend more on this thing than I have to, or I'm going to need to do this more quickly than would be most ideal. It's taking that step back and saying, but is this the way I always do it? Do I always approach stuff like this? Like, do I always say, well, I'm gonna buy the toy because God wants to bless me, so I buy the toy every time.
Right.
That's not doing it right. Or you know, if I never have time to engage that person in the store because I'm always in a rush, that's the problem. So it's not sin to sometimes have to be in a bit of a hurry, but if my heart is in a constant state of hurry so that I never feel like I can stop and listen to someone or engage them in a substantive way, that's a heart issue that has to be addressed.
Well, and that right there is such a great point, that it is that hurried heart condition that I remember meeting somebody one time that was he's a pastor and an author, and I just happened to run into him, and he's somebody that I would love to speak with. When I realized the environment we were in, he had a million things pulling at him, but we stood there and talked for about, it's probably only about 2 minutes, but he was so unhurried. I was so amazed by the fact that I looked at that and I was like, you are very aware that you have these other responsibilities, and you're making me feel like you would love to sit and talk with me for an hour, but you don't have time for that because you have other responsibilities. But those 2 minutes were a very unhurried 2 minutes. Mm. And I think that's something that I try to do, because you know this, on Sundays I can get sucked in because I want to connect with people and talk to them. There is a way to go into Walmart and know I do need to get home, but I could still minister to the cashier in that moment by not being hurried. Yeah. Like, I could still move peacefully through that line. It might cost me an extra 5 seconds, but even more than that is the demeanor. So I think that's important. But to do the proverbial bow on the entire thing, one thing that has just come to my mind, that just as we talked about those big picture things at the beginning, the punctuation at the end is really, all of this boils down to a question of desire. Do you really want to abide in Christ in this way? Because at the end of the day, you can look at your calendar, you can do the things we talked about on Sunday, where you write out, you know, take a inventory of your time for the week, and you could look at it and you could see, oh, I'm doing all these things that are not related to my purpose and really why God has placed me here. But the question is, do you want to abide in Christ and be about the things that he wants you to be about more than you want those other things? And I've found in my life that's where it gets really difficult. That's where the kind of the rubber meets the road, is like, I know in theory that this thing from God is more important than this commitment that I've made over here or this activity my kids are in. But then when it actually comes down to, okay, then I need to stop doing that. I need to pull my kids out of this activity. I need to stop participating in this thing, because even though it's a good thing and even though I enjoy it, I know that isn't what I'm supposed to be doing, or that's not even like what I'm supposed to be doing, but that's not where Christ is leading me. And so therefore I'm choosing the rewards of that worldly thing over the rewards of abiding in Christ. And it is just not black and white. Like, you can't look at it and say, okay, well then that means everyone should pull their kids out of baseball. Well, no, because for a lot of people, that is where God wants them, because they are able to serve and build relationships. We've had incredible relationships through youth sports. So it's not that, like, we'll just stop doing that. But it is being intentional and ultimately at the end of the day saying, okay, God, you are the manager of my time and of my money and of my resources. They all belong to you. Whatever you want to get rid of, get rid of. Whatever you want to invest in, like, I'm there. And but that's a heart check of like, is that right. What I want?
Right. And that's a great example, because there's a radical difference between I can't obey what God has called me to because of youth sports versus right. Youth sports is one of the means by which I obey what God has called me to. Right. So that's the means by which I engage the community to develop relationships with people who don't yet know Jesus so that I can disciple them in the gospel. That's good use of your time.
Right.
And so the issue is not what's the activity that you're doing outside of overt sin, but like all of these gray area issues, it's not what is the activity that you're doing. It's what is this activity the end, or is there a means to an end, and what is the actual end that you are using? And so when all of these things become either an end in and of themselves or an end towards something that is not Christ, that's when we look at them and we go, well, I'm just too busy with all of these other things to obey the direct commandments of Jesus. That's when right. It becomes a significant problem.
So good. And as always, we encourage you to reach out in community. Like, if you want to process this, you can talk to any of us, or you can just talk to other people that you're walking this road with. And that's where it's so important to not be judgmental of those things with one another, that that we need to process it with one another, because our hearts are deceitful, because we're not very good judges of our own motivations, because we're so good at justifying things. It is a messy path. And by being in community and sharing with one another some of those struggles, it can be scary to do that, but it is incredibly helpful to do that together. So we'd want to encourage you to do that, and encourage you to ask us any other questions that you might have, whether it's about the sermon or not. We've been getting some really good questions that are not connected to the messages, that are just like other theological questions. And so we are working on pulling those together and figuring out how to address some of those. We have some ideas about that. So if you have other questions that you just feel like they feel random to you, please contact us. Let us know what those are as we kind of figure out how to deal with some of those things. I guess that's it. I get to sign off today. Oh, yeah, Robbie's backed away from the microphone, so he's like...
I thought my body language made it clear that I was expecting you to...
You're assuming I'm paying attention
close
to you,
close
Robbie.
It.
Thank you for paying attention to us. And until next time, grace and peace.